This is Side Hustle with Luke and Omar. We'll explore what it takes to run a side hustle with talented individuals from different backgrounds and experiences. We will discuss things like taking the plunge, personal challenges, and the balancing act of maintaining a day job whilst side hustling to make the dream a reality. Now sit back, relax, as we talk to some of these amazing individuals. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Side Hustle with Luke and Omar. Today we have a special guest, Sam Perry. Mm-hmm. Sam, how are you going today, man?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Good, good, thank you. Lovely to have you here.
Yeah, lovely to be here.
Thank you so much for giving up your time to be here with us on a Friday evening. It's usually been our schedule, but we're very grateful that you can join us, man.
Of course.
I got my co-host as well, Luke Ferrugia. What's going on, man?
I'm wrapped. It's one of the first times he's got the name right. Yeah. So I'm pretty happy with that. But yeah, no, good, good. It's been a productive day, pretty exciting day, actually. There's a bit of a lack of whiteboards at work, so we stack up all these, the director of product, I'm not sure what his title is. We stack up all these boards. It's like phone call boards.
Right.
So we've just been like mapping shit out today, which was just like just pure UX fun.
Basically. Yeah, yeah.
It's really, really
cool.
Good.
Cool, yeah, man.
Pretty good day.
Sam, give us a bit of a spiel about yourself. Just a quick, off the bat, just whatever comes to your head. Describe yourself.
So I would say I've been working freelance for the last couple of years, offering, well, design and development. Been working on my own stuff for as long as I can remember in some shape or form. Always had something on the side. Mm. And yeah. Designer, developer, love design, have a keen interest in design, and yeah.
It's seriously, it's awesome to have you here because Luke and I have been, we've chatted multiple times about how we can potentially collaborate with you, and we know other people who have collaborated with you and they've got nothing but good things to say about you. And
including me.
Including Luke, yep. And it's just, it's awesome to have you here. So I'm really excited to kind of get into it. Obviously, one of our previous guests, Steve Scott, who you're currently working with as
wrong.
Well.
No, your name's wrong.
the names are there. I'm just a little bit tongue-tied. Which episode was Steve Scott on?
We recorded three? Steve early. He was the third recording, yeah. Where he came out on like the fifth because it was sure. So long we had to cut it, figure out how to cut it.
Yeah.
I remember he told me like you guys had recorded and that it went for a while and then it didn't come out for a little while after that.
I hope he wasn't upset about that.
No, he wasn't. Oh, good. He was good. Laughing because like, he knew you guys like went for a long time.
It was, yeah, it was
quite
long.
That was one thing he kept on saying after it, like, I'm sorry for ranting and rambling and stuff. And I was like, no, it was good. It was good really stuff. Good.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But there was a bit of rambling. But it was really good. Like we cut that stuff out a little bit, but yeah. It was interesting the lineage of it because we wanted to really drop as we record so we could show the progression of our like Omar and I's shitness.
Yeah, sure.
And shitness. is that even a word?
Well, how shit we are or were on the mic or are, I'm not sure.
Excuse
and
me.
And yeah, and it's weird when you listen to it because it goes from like decent.
Yeah.
I feel like Episode 2 is pretty bad. Charlie's really good, and then it goes good, and then
I think it was just let's just put it within the different category. It was just different.
Different. Yeah. Also, we got too drunk on that one. Like,
we
drank like three.
We did.
Packs
it was silly. It was silly. We shouldn't be on the mic if we're that drunk. Anyways, back to our guest Sam. Yes. Luke hogging the mic. So, Sam, describe what would you consider as your side hustle as opposed to your consistent kind of 9 to 5. I know you don't have a 9 to 5 because you just kind of grind out and try to find freelance jobs, but how would you define the more continuous thing as opposed to the side hustle?
First, I'd probably say freelance jobs find me at the moment. Like, and this is something that's kind of, so I used to work in Envato about 2 years ago. I was in Envato for about 2.5 years.
Yep.
And since then I've had a pretty constant stream of work. Like, I've never really been looking for work, all from referrals and word of mouth from Envato, which has been awesome.
That's
super grateful
amazing,
for that.
Amazing, man.
But that's just kind of how it's worked out.
Yeah.
So I would say the split is my full-time or my whatever is the freelance stuff, which is like, I'm doing this because I need money. I need to pay the bills.
Absolutely.
And, I've always kind of had my my side hustle stuff on the side, which is just like passion project type stuff where it's not really for money. Some of the ones I'm working on now, one of the ones I'm working on now is that's the eventual idea, but how I kind of, for the longest time working freelance, it was on a project called Daily Fire, and that's just it's a music sharing app that's on Slack currently. And that had no real pathway to revenue or whatever. So my idea was freelance to pay the bills. And then with the time that affords me, I can work on the other things.
Daily Fire is actually really cool. If anyone's on Slack, make sure you download it or integrate it within your Slack channel.
Well, I think that's a great segue. Like, can you tell us more about, because that is the side hustle.
Yeah.
Let's jump into a little bit about Daily Fire.
Yep. So Daily Fire is a music sharing app on Slack. Basically, it records all the music that's shared in a specific channel. It'll find the alternate platform links. So if you share a Spotify link, it'll find the YouTube, Spotify, Google Play, Apple Music, all the other links, so that anyone else in the channel can listen to that same song. It syncs up playlists for everything shared, so across platform as well, so YouTube, SoundCloud, and Spotify. And it's just basically a way to encourage people sharing music in Slack. Because what I found at Envato, I started at Envato, just a Slack channel called Daily Fire. The idea being because working as a developer, you're just like working with headphones on, you listen to music all the time. Yep. Fire being that thing that's kind of get you pumped up today, whatever that is, that's your fire for the day. That's what you share. Right. And it was originally like max two songs a day because we wanted kind of quality. Whatever. It wasn't just like spam all the music you listen to. It's just like whatever's pumping you up today.
For sure.
That was the idea. And then it kind of grew from there because that was the original idea. But then it was like, people really kind of connect with this. And then what happened is the community that kind of built around it was all quite like-minded people. And it kind of gave people a place to talk to like-minded people like them, about things that won't work. And it would be like across different areas in the company. So marketing, design, development that wouldn't typically interact too much other than over work stuff, we're now talking on a personal level. And then
was that in the channel? Like,
yeah, through the channel? In the channel. So people would just share a song, be like, hey, I didn't know you were into that sort of music or whatever. Wow. And then there'd be a little conversation that started about it. And then we kind of built on that, introducing like theme days. It was Wednesday. It was like a volunteer nominated system where you just volunteer, be like, hey, I want to suggest a theme for Wednesday. Theme could be summer music, songs from your childhood, whatever it is. And then everyone would share songs like that. Usually on theme days, you do a little write-up about what the song is and how it relates to the theme. So it just basically became like a little community in there, a really nice little community.
That's awesome.
And that kind of just encouraged me to build on it more and try to really encourage music in the workplace. And Slack has a really nice developer API and platform compared to the other apps that are out there. And it was just a nice little home for it.
That's really cool because the first thing that I picked up after you've explained that is music is such a personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you share a song or an album with someone, by default, you've introduced yourself to someone.
Yep. I said that in like kind of the earlier days. It was like, because what I would always get asked is like, oh, I don't want to join Daily Fire. I feel scared to share music. And I thought that's a great thing because that shows like you have a bit of vulnerability to actually share it.
Absolutely.
And that just like really brings in the personal level to the feeling in the chat, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, definitely.
And it is very personal.
Absolutely. It's quite personal, but at the same time, it leads to other avenues of discussions and you don't have to introduce yourself and be all formal. Hey, I'm blah, 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 and I work in such department.
Yep.
You drop a link and you're going to have a bunch of people going, shit, I'm into that, and start dropping different emojis and stuff, which is encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an underlying genius in all this where you're literally connecting people who would never mess with each other or, you know, hang out outside of work or whatever.
I can totally attest to that because I was there at that time. And in the kitchen at Nevada, it was so much easier to talk to someone if you had just a simple, you wouldn't talk about the share, but you just knew there was a bit of commonality there.
I said that kind of about it being, it's like, it's not that you're going to be instantly connected to this person and you're going to go have a good, great time of the weekend or something, you know. It's just the fact that you now walk past them in the hallway or whatever and be like, hey, you know, hey, I would have never talked to you. I wouldn't have even known you, but because we've had somewhat of an interaction over something that's personal, like music, you have that now connection.
Absolutely.
It's just something small, but I think it adds a lot to the professional workplace.
I 100% agree.
Discovering new music as well. That's a big part of it, I found. Definitely. As well.
I think it does so much for the culture in the workplace as well, because yes, you are talking on Slack. Yes, it is a digital medium, but then after work, drinks on a Friday, that's a common thing that you can talk about and discuss with your with your colleagues, you know, which is awesome. So obviously I know you. We've tried to work together in the past and things just haven't been, you know, signed off or what have you. And what I'm sensing is that you've got an entrepreneurial spirit and I want to kind of dig into that a little bit. So you're only 23. You've been working for yourself for the last 2 years, which is fucking amazing. And you've got two side hustles, if not more, that we don't know of. So what I want to do is dig a little bit more towards kind of your childhood. Has anything influenced you during your upbringing, parents, grandparents, any kind of relatives to kind of give you that? Because surely you would have had to see someone do it for you to kind of go, okay, that struck something and now I need to do this for myself.
Yeah.
And I'm just speculating here, but
I think in a quite passive way that has happened. And so basically I'm born in New Zealand, in Christchurch, and then
I had no idea. I'm from Auckland.
Yeah. Nice.
Awesome, man.
Yeah,
that's how we get along. We kids.
The amount of kids who come to the show without knowing.
It's incredible. Yeah.
So yeah, born in New Zealand, Christchurch. My parents split up. I moved over here with my mum and my stepdad when I was five. Basically grew up from most of my life, well, all of my life, basically, in Australia. And yeah, went to school, all fine. I thought I wanted to be, I always like kind of building things or like the idea of building things. My dad's a mechanic, and I always thought I wanted to do mechanical engineering in school.
Right.
Because I liked, making things.
Sorry,
like,
your dad or your stepdad is a
dad? Dad. Yep. Yeah, because I always liked how things work. I liked physics, like maths. It just kind of seemed natural. Mechanical engineering, something like that. And then in year like 10, 11, one of my good mates and I, well, I played League of Legends and I watched a lot of streams and videos on League of Legends. Wanted to get, I'm quite competitive. so I wanted to get really good at League. So I'd watch a whole bunch of professionals play League and whatever champion. And basically in League of Legends, you choose a champion to go in. And then there's all these professional players, which are real people playing those specific champions.
Sorry, this is like a computer game, right?
Yeah, computer game. Yep. And I would always watch these videos and I would always want to watch either a specific champion because I was trying to learn how a good player plays them well, or I wanted to play, or I wanted to watch a specific person because I liked their personality and they were entertaining streamer or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So the first website that I built with a friend, a good friend, was called League VOD. It's still up now, but basically that was the introduction, and it allowed you to search League of Legends videos from YouTube by player and champion or either or. So it was just, it's quite simple, but what happens is a lot of these videos are uploaded to YouTube with a similar structure title. It's like so-and-so playing this champion. So it was like a simple algorithm to like look through that and be like, okay,
it's like a directory of videos.
I have a big list of champions, match that name into this title. I have a big list of player names, match that name into the title, and like it can kind of figure it out, put that into a database, and then be able to search it quite easily.
Crazy.
And it was like, it's pretty simple now that I look back on it, but that was like a huge hurdle. We stopped, like we quit making this so many times, like because it was like learning how to code, learning how a database works, learning how to set up a website. I remember there were like a lot of nights where I was had like my monitor set up with YouTube on the right-hand side, Google Sheet on the left-hand side, going through all these videos and doing it myself. Like, you know, this player, okay, put that in the
player
column.
Crazy.
So how did you figure out all that stuff? Like all of those little different elements of development?
Slowly, but I think having, and I always tell those people that like want to learn how to code, is like have a project to work on. Mm-hmm. Like you need to do Code Academy, his website, just like just online courses and stuff. It's fine, but you'll be demoralized. There's so many like little hurdles that you have to overcome.
Yep.
Learning how to program, having one, a project that you actually want to use the outcome of, mm-hmm. To work on is motivating, and also having someone to work on it with. So it was just a process of keep chipping away at it and yeah. feeding off each other to encourage each other to do it. The icing on the cake for that was that's probably been my most successful project today, because
how old were you when you launched
that? I was year 11, so, and I was a year young for my year, so 16 and 17.
Sure, okay.
And yeah, we're just pretty
man, at 16, 17, I was doing some whack ass shit yeah. to make money.
Yeah, yeah.
Dodgy.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, yeah, sorry.
Well, I think I was not selling burnt CDs at that age.
I was selling yeah. something. I was selling yeah, pharmaceuticals, to say the least.
Well, yeah, we were working on this thing. But I mean, like, it wasn't constant work on it. It was just like a thing that we were working on the side. But basically, we launched this website, and the League of Legends subreddit on Reddit is huge. It's like probably, there's probably well over a million now.
I'd
League
imagine, Legends yeah. is huge.
But at the time, it probably had just under a million, maybe 700,000 people. And we got on the front page of that, which was huge. Wow. And like 60,000-ish page views over like 2-3 days, which was massive to us then. Took down the server, we had no idea. We were on like some cheap $5 shared server thing. But it was that kind of like work so hard, quit so many times, like trying to build this thing. And then we finally got it live, and it actually got a whole bunch of love from people that, you know, wanted to use this.
That's
thing.
Amazing, man.
So that was just like hugely encouraging. Yeah. There was no money. Well, actually there was money that we had a premium account, which I don't even know what it did now, but it might've been able to save videos or something really simple. It was like $4, and we got one person to buy it. And actually, thinking about that, to date, that is the only money I've had come through from side projects. Was that $4.
Dude, that's still a win.
Yeah,
that's
amazing. It was absolutely
a
win.
From a zero to $4, exactly. That's a win.
But yeah, absolutely it was a win. But I guess the biggest thing from that was getting on the front page of this League of Legends subreddit and just like having all that traffic come through was just like, it was so fun just watching Google Analytics just like go crazy, 4,000 people on the site or whatever, and like something that you've just kind of built. And yeah, it's been downhill from there really, because I don't know any other site that's done that.
Were you studying this at the time? I mean, at 16, no. Obviously you would have been in high school.
No, yeah, I was in high school. I'm a self-taught programmer and designer. So yeah, that was while I was doing IB. So rather than VC, we did IB.
What's IB?
International Baccalaureate. It's just like, it's like VC, but whereas VC, you can like choose your subjects and stuff. And VC,
what does VC stand for?
Victorian Certificate of Education.
Sure.
And then IB is International Baccalaureate. And the idea is that the certificate you get at the end of year 12 is recognized internationally rather than Australia.
Yeah.
And you get an IB score, which converts into an ATAR score to get into the Australian.
You've already confused me.
ATAR score is just like the university score. Like, you know, if you want to be in medicine, where you have to have like 90 ATAR, whatever it is, that's not the number.
And which courses did you do in uni?
Well, I went to uni for about 6 months, software engineering.
Okay.
But I
you were just like, these people are dumb, I'm much smarter, I'm out. Fuck them. I'm not paying my student loans.
It was kind of like that. It was not that they were dumb, it was that university had to start from scratch. I had to start from, this is HTML, this is how you make a website and tables. And it's like all the stuff that, like, I was sitting in class building web apps. Like, I was building Eat Under at the time, which we can get into as well. But like, I was just like, I'd done all that stuff.
Sure.
At that point I was like, I can't, a 4-year degree, I can't. I remember actually one point in uni, being in one of the tutorials, and I was showing the tutor, my website, like LeagueVod, the one that I was doing. And he was like, you should be teacher this class.
Wow.
And I was like, I'm getting out of here then. Like, I don't want to be here if this is the case.
As soon as you get that from your tutor, man, well done. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did 6 months, and the kind of nail in the coffin there was that I rocked up a day late for one of the exams that I was studying for on the day that I missed it, that it was on. I rocked up the day after.
So like a whole 24 hours after?
Yeah, yeah. So like it was like 8:30 in the morning, whatever, 9 o'clock, whatever the exam was.
Yeah.
I was there looking at the timetables, figuring out where I need to go. And I was like, oh, fuck, my thing's not there. Like, my exam's not there. I was like looking online. Oh, it was yesterday. And I had like 47 in that. It's just like super basic classes, like year one, uni, first 6 months.
Yeah, you were pretty much just coming in to, you know, shuffle a few keys and then.
Yeah, I had 47, like at the end of the year, 47 on my thing. You need to get over 50 something to pass. So I literally had to rock up, put my name on the exam. I would have been fine, but I didn't. And then that made me have to retake that course the next year. Oh, so I was no. So the next 6 months, I didn't really, I was enrolled, but I didn't really rock up. And in that 6 months, I got the job at Envato. Because at that point I was like, well, if I'm here, if I'm feeling this way at uni, I'll go apply for a few jobs. And that's where I applied at. I think I applied at Carter. I applied at a bunch of other places. Mm. There was a role at an agency in South Yarra that I was looking at taking, but then I met up with a recruiter about Envato, and she's like, Envato's slow to hire.
Sure.
So wait on them because that's a better offer than the one that I had sitting on the table.
Okay.
So how did you make that happen?
Yes, that was going to be my question.
Well, before that, just a thought I have is all the money that you saved on uni, it doesn't matter that you haven't made any money yet on the side hustle, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
You saved all that cash.
But
it wasn't making any cash though. So,
but I mean, given that you've only had 6 months of uni and you're considered as a uni dropout, for lack of better terms, how did you build up a CV and approach the likes of Envato? Like, how much balls do you have on you?
No, I don't know, maybe, but like, so I guess to preface that, I'd already had like a few apps since League VOD, which was the first one in year 11, I'd built a few. So my CV was working at the winery, which is just manual labor work.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of side projects.
Which was all personal side projects. Yeah, that weren't clients.
No. So this is what I think I said earlier was I feel like I've been working on side hustles my whole life because I kind of have. Like League VOD was the first one.
Yeah.
And then there was this one called PageLift, which was just like an SEO thing. You put in your URL, it tells you all your SEO thing, what you should fill out and, you know, how it ranks. But it was quite simple, but it was fun. And then
this guy's so modest. Like everything is just simple, but you know, you just had to do X, Y, Z and it just worked. Okay.
Well, and yeah. And then after that was Eat Under, which was an app that I was a uni student. So I was like, where can I eat cheaply in Melbourne?
Right.
So much good food around me, but I have not much money. So Eat Under was you put your price in, $10, whatever.
Yep.
It takes your current location and figures out what you can eat, closest to you.
Okay.
That's amazing.
Okay. Let me put a pin in that story just before you continue because I'm already sensing a trend and I don't want to forget it because I've had a few wines. What I want to tap into is there seems to be a trend here. Whenever you're approached with something, you're like, cool, I'll just use my smart brain to find a solution for this. Where does this hunger come from? Is it hunger? Is it curiosity? Is it a mixture of both? Is it wanting to find a solution?
Yeah.
What's going on?
I think it comes down to, I always thought like dad is a mechanic. Granddad is a electrical engineer. All kind of builders of some sort. Dad does a lot of work for himself now, just caravans, cars, houses, whatever. Kind of do it all.
Yeah.
And when I kind of started doing software programming, I can't say engineering because I'm not an engineer, but I effectively do that sort of stuff. I always likened it to building something without having to start with anything. So in an electrical engineering role or a mechanic role, you have to have the physical things to put together.
You
have to buy this
thing.
If you don't have something
Absolutely.
With electronics, you have to get the specific part. Software development is, I have an empty text editor in front of me and my ideas are the limit, you know, like you can literally build anything. Like,
yeah, but how did you go, okay, cool, I'm going to go from wanting to, well, learning from or observing my parents and relatives who were somewhat handy and quite practical to implementing those learnings on applying Canvas? I mean, how did that transition happen? Was it
doing it a lot? Like,
well, I think maybe another way to phrase it is, I can't remember the name of the app, the League of Legends app.
Mm-hmm.
At what moment, like, you recognize that you wanted this thing, you mm-hmm. like this champion, you like this character, sorry, streamer. Like, at what moment were you like, I can just build this? Like, how did that happen?
It's like I said.
Thanks, Luke. That was actually well.
Yeah, I was into like.
That was well put. Thank you. Yeah. I'm just baffled by this dude. So thank you.
I think just logic. Like, yeah. When I say I liked physics and maths and science, that sort of stuff really appealed to me. And it came down to seeing the pattern, because that's what computer software engineering is. It's like patterns.
Yeah.
Seeing the pattern of these YouTube videos that were uploaded, same structure of title. It's so-and-so playing this champion.
Uh-huh.
It's like, that shouldn't be that hard to search that, you know, or at least index it, like to say, okay, look at all the videos from this player.
So
it sounds like you're a bit of a genius, because I've never noticed that in any thread.
If you watch enough of them, you'll notice. And I watched a lot of them.
It's under the genius umbrella, but it seems like there's a tendency to solve problems.
Yeah.
Would you call yourself a problem solver?
Yeah.
And would it come just to software or general life? If you're approached with a barrier or a blocker, even in your personal life, do you always find a way around it or a logical explanation?
I would say, I lean on the side of logic. Yeah.
Yep.
Particularly with software. It feels pretty natural to me now to think of a solution that way. But I would say it is, pretty logic based.
The essence of it is problem solving. It's like, okay, cool. I'm passionate about this vision. Yeah. I'm passionate about this idea. I see a pain point.
Mm-hmm.
Let me go see, find a solution.
Yep.
And figure it out from there.
So when you talk about the blank canvas or the blank text editor mm-hmm. in front of you, so when you say the sky's the limit, what is that? Can you maybe break that down? Like, is it to do with the languages you know, or like, how does that, the developer language, I mean, like, how does that?
Perhaps. I would be considered a full stack engineer. So you do front end and back end. So that definitely helps. But it comes down to the problem solving thing. It's like any problem, any idea you have, you just break it down into the logical steps that need to kind of happen. And it's just one foot in front of the other. Okay, we need a user sign up form. Okay, do that. And then, okay, we need to have some sort of thing that, in the case of Levod, that looks at YouTube. Okay, I need to figure out how to get that video data.
Yeah.
Like, I want to actually see that. And then, okay, that's that step done.
It's just a matter of dissecting the problem just so it's not a big, chunky, hairy thing that's coming your way and you want to avoid it.
Yep.
You face it head on. You dissect it into smaller chunks.
Yep.
And you basically apply logic to one thing at a time as you go through it.
Yep.
So that's why we break an epic card down,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Exactly.
For that, because you've got this mammoth thing in front of you.
Yep.
How do I do this?
Exactly.
Break it down. And when I say epic, I mean like in Trello, like a card.
Yeah.
So you break it down into smaller cards, checklists, and that's...
It's exactly that, And that's what I really liked about Envato. Is like, I learned so much in Envato. Like, I learned heaps in Envato. But exactly that, like, kind of formalizing the process that was in my head, you know.
Sure.
It's like, have this big task that you want to do. Okay, break it down into smaller tasks that will take a couple of weeks to a month.
Yeah.
Break it down smaller, and then you break it down into, actually, okay, here's a 2-hour piece of work that needs to be done.
Just one quick question before we move too far on. You mentioned before software developer versus software engineer.
Yeah.
Can you maybe break down the difference? Like, what is the difference? Like, what is the...
In my head, nothing, but I'm sure there's people out there that like probably, you know, I actually read a headline the other day, something about not being able to call yourself an engineer unless you do the degree. Like if you have a degree in engineering. Yeah. It's a formality thing. I use the terms interchangeably, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Software engineer, software developer, it's whatever. But some people have spent 4 years on a degree trying to get that.
Trying to get that clout, and that title.
But it's at the end of the day, it's like it's how good you are or how efficiently you can build something, and to a level of quality, you know, like it does. And I think sometimes we get down, especially as developers, get too in the nitty gritty how things work that we forget the bigger picture of like
100%.
What is this meant to do to a user. 500 milliseconds versus 1 second for this load, like it's like it's whatever at the end of the day. So
but it's that logic.
Yeah,
it's that logic. It's that facing a problem but also implementing a human element to it, so you're not caught up in the nitty-gritty, like you said.
Oh, the amount of load time conversations I've had.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Sorry, where were we before this, before I put a pin on it and then kind of went full U-turn? I fully lost my train of thought because you were onto something there.
It was talking about how Sam got into Envato and the apps on the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. That was it.
Yeah. So, well.
Thanks, Luke.
Yeah. So the portfolio was apps and I was working on one at the time. Oh, there was also another one in between.
Oh,
well,
shut up, Sam.
So there was the SEO one. What was after the SEO one?
Well, the SEO one was
there was
like
a food one.
The food one is the one I'm talking
about. Okay, let's do a bit of a roll call. There was the event, not event. What am I saying? Event
League,
is? It wasn't
League of Legends.
League of Legends.
League of Legends.
Yep.
The food one.
Yep.
SEO.
SEO one. Where, yep. And then there was PT Pal, which is funny because it kind of ties into Fitter, what I work on now. But
it's PT.
PT Pal, Personal Trainer Pal, which is like a little app for personal trainers to schedule classes and take payment for those classes. So if you're a personal trainer, it didn't go anywhere.
Did you go to a gym session and you were just like, this is shit, I need to create something for it?
No.
Where did the need come from then?
The need was like, oh, this sounds like I could make a bit of money off it, $20 a month. Whatever it is, I was like, oh, if I get X amount of users for $20 a month, it's whatever.
What, were you just sitting down having a beer somewhere?
And
then
ones that I've done as well. Paid, which was like a little add-on to Stripe. Like Stripe is super nice.
Payment gateway, yeah.
And it was like a storefront for you, kind of like, there's a bunch of other ones out there. I was working on that as well. That the idea for that is kind of all based on money. If I get X amount of transactions, take a bit of the transaction. The thing is, I build all these products. I get to the point where it's like, okay, I'm ready to launch, get my first user, and then I have no idea what to do. And then I'm like, okay, next one.
I think we should collaborate on something.
That's where we come in. That's where we commercialize things, Damn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Damn isn't the word. It's exciting.
No, damn isn't like, damn, we should have been there earlier.
Yeah.
It's interesting when you say the PT one is similar to Fitter.
Yeah.
Because I kind of see some similarities between the League of Legends ones, one to Daily Fire as well.
Yep.
With the sort of like sorting content and distributing content.
Well, Steve said this as well. Like, it's an interesting way to think about websites. It's like all a website is at the end of the day is a list of things, right? Like, and you can break down so many websites to just being a list of things. Facebook being a list of your news feed, Instagram being that, and it's really ordering that list that is, or sorting that and making relevant content appear in that list, depending on whatever your intention is. In League of Legends, it's like, okay, I want to see a list of only this player. In Daily Fire, it's, I want to see a list of the tracks shared in this channel.
That's interesting. That's exactly how I break it down from a UX level.
Yeah.
It's like the list of like, the rhythm of the page is like the why, the how, like, and then how different people order it in different ways as you look across the spectrum of competitors.
Yep.
Mm.
All right. It's interesting.
So you got into Envato with 6 months of university studies and bunch of apps.
Was that process long as the recruiter mentioned? Like,
yeah,
I know that came
took,
along.
It took me...
Envato do like 5 interviews or something, right?
I had about 5. I think an initial interview and then a technical like screening on the phone.
Yeah.
Test, technical review like of that test as well as like an in-person whiteboard session thing, and then a cultural fit test, which is just are you a decent person?
Yeah.
Would you fit in with the culture? It takes a while. Like Envato definitely takes a while.
Okay.
But I'm super glad I hung it out because at that time I was coding mostly in PHP and that's what I would have gone to do like WordPress type stuff at an agency that I also had an offer on the table for. Whereas Envato is a really good engineering culture there where it's like the quality is really high.
That's awesome.
And I've heard a lot from people that have left Envato to go other places. It's like the level of
the reputation precedes them.
Yeah, competency there is really high.
Yeah.
And I think that is a huge factor in how much I learn.
That's awesome, man.
There. And just, yeah, kind of before and after Envato is like night and day for me in terms of Envato really launched my freelance type of stuff. Like I have so much more confidence in being able to quote work and scope stuff, knowing that that's how a real company operates. Yep. And now I can be like, okay, I kind of know what a high standard is. I can offer something, someone here.
That's so awesome. It's so interesting because from a design level, I feel exactly the same. It's like before Envato and after Envato. Yeah. In my side hustle career.
Hey, can Envato sponsor this episode? We've dropped their name so many times.
Well, look, we're going to get this transcript. SEO value is going to be amazing. Yeah.
But I remember, like, I was doing freelance, just little projects, Squarespace type sites. I did one that I can remember quite well for a little shop in Geelong, and it was a nightmare. I charged $500 for the website on Squarespace, which I thought was a lot. Now I know that the less you charge, the more work it is. Like, it's inversely proportional. But I remember that I wouldn't never pick up the phone to talk to this person, all this stuff. Like, just kind of confidence and just knowing how a business runs so much. I learned from that. And that's helped me so much in the freelance
stuff. That's awesome, that I'm working on now. So what I want to know is, obviously you said you spent 2 years at Envato, and then after that, it's just been freelance ever since. So 2 years, we're talking about what, 2017, 2018?
Well, it would have been earlier than that. Like, I've been, what, so freelance or Envato?
Well, when did you leave? Because you said you've been doing freelance for the last 2 years. Yeah. And then I'm assuming Envato was your latest.
Yeah.
So your most recent 9-to-5.
Was this your only 9-to-5?
My only 9-to-5.
Yeah. Wow.
You know what's crazy about that? Because we worked at Envato together. Yeah. And I never knew that that was your first job.
Yeah.
And the impact when you left, the amount it was felt when Sam left. It's just amazing to think that you came from going to school to working full time.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember, so approximately which year did you leave?
Well, it would have been 2017.
Sure.
February year end.
Yeah. What I want to know is that plunge. Talk us through that. When did you go, all right, thank you, 9-to-5.
Yeah.
Hello, freelance freedom.
Yeah. So
I'm not too sure if it sounds that glorious, but
it was originally for sure. It's funny because my first client was Steve, and that was the only client I had. On Fitter, not as a partner or anything, but on the app.
Was Steve paying you well? Or?
He was paying me, He was the first person. I originally quoted him at $70 an hour.
Right.
He was the first person to be like, you need to be charging at least
$100.
Wow. So I remember him telling me that, actually.
Yeah. Shout out to Steve Scott, by the way. He's an amazing dude. He's done some crazy stuff out there. Yeah.
So the transition was that I started at Envato in a team called Content and in Pony Express specifically, which was awesome, super fun little team.
Yeah.
And I eventually started to, as a Ruby developer, back-end developer, I started to transition and do more things for front-end, on the front-end stuff. And that kind of started off with my first ever Hack Week project, which was to redesign ThemeForest, the homepage, which won. And I remember... just because Colas loves design and all that stuff, so I was really appealing to him and just seeing...
Colas is the CEO of Envato.
Seeing the homepage, because it's kind of a thing at Envato. Like, design moves quite slowly in Envato because, for good reason in some regards, because it's a big thing. It's what makes all their money, and making those changes will impact the bottom line kind of thing that it's not... Anyway, so I started to transition to more front-end roles, got this exciting role in a new product that they had called Hosted. Mm-hmm. And that I was able, and in that role, I was able to do a lot of design and the front-end development.
Sure.
So I was because I do love design. Mm-hmm. And I think and that's kind of what I was going towards. So I got this role in Hosted. It was really fun, really fast paced, because it's just a team of, there would have been five, six of us there. Just go really quickly. I was the designer and developer, so I could do all this stuff. And then the product started to become, it was always eventually become a bigger piece, kind of like Elements, it became a bigger piece of Envato and be merged into the bigger market umbrella of Envato.
Right.
And in that process, the marketing gets involved, the designers and stuff start to have ownership over the stuff that I previously had ownership of. And that for me was a bit demoralizing, where I was it's slower. I thought the design didn't look as good, all these things. And it just kind of zapped my enthusiasm for it. And that kind of just kept going. And then eventually, I'd been thinking about it for a little while of like, you know, I just don't enjoy doing it. I'd try to get all these little things in, they'd be pushed back because they weren't
right
to on brand or whatever.
Yeah, you weren't being heard. Your ideas weren't being appreciated.
And I felt like this was the product was a combination of a lot of people and an external a team that got acquired by Envato. But the front end and the look of it was mostly my product. Yep. And I was literally designing in Sketch, presenting those files in Sketch to the product team, and then going and developing them.
Yeah.
So I had a real sense of ownership of it. And then as it started to be swallowed up by the larger Envato, I just like, it kind of hurt, you know? And then that was like, to me, it was like, okay, the next thing I want to work on is I want to own it, not for an ego thing, but like to actually be able to like say, this is mine at the end of the day.
It's giving you that hunger to go, all right, I actually want to see this thing right through rather than handing it over to another team.
Exactly. Yeah, not have someone to come in and be like, oh, actually, we're going to change this and that. And it's outside of my control now.
Yeah, that's really shit. I need to put another pin in this before we move on. Okay, so problem solving. Nothing gets in your way. If it's a design issue, you're going to learn that shit and implement it. If it's a development issue, you're going to learn that shit, implement it. If it's a discussion or a debate with someone, you're going to go prepare for it and face it on. So what I'm hearing right now is that nothing is going to fucking stop you.
Well, I always say like, to be an authority on this, but I feel like to be a good developer, you have to be self-taught in some extent. Like,
No. But sorry, what I'm saying is that you can't call yourself a developer because that's unfair on your talents. What I'm hearing here is a strategist, is a service designer, a developer, a multidisciplinarian of some sort. Like, not to blow too much smoke up your ass, but what I'm saying is that whenever you're approached with a problem, nothing's going to stop you. You're going to learn whatever it is that needs to be learned to kind of get over that hump or to climb that fence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just fucking outstanding because I'm yet to hear you go, oh, fuck, I've given up. I've just left it. You're seeing everything through till the end before you go, okay.
Yeah.
Which is something unheard of, right? We haven't had a guest yet that, I mean, besides Steve Scott, who's obviously crazy because he keeps seeing his point through and he's never going to give up. But in terms of attacking multiple disciplines.
Oh, multiple disciplines, no. But I think similar sentiment is Joe, who we had last week.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I think us.
Mm.
Yeah.
Not in development realm or anything, but the same like fire. Like,
I think do it. I think there's a theme here, but to your testament is that nothing gets in your way. Nothing is going to faze you. Nothing's going to make you break a sweat.
I think I kind of learned that in overcoming the challenges of learning to develop by yourself and seeing something through, because development gets to the point where it's like, it's all gibberish. It's all like, you know, hard to make sense of. And then you start chipping away at it and then you hit this hurdle and you're like, okay, I give up. I can't get through it. Anyway, going through that whole process and coming out the other side of it was like, okay, you can learn anything. And I think like you can on the internet now, like there's so much resources out
there. Definitely.
Absolutely.
Not everything, but 90% of what you want.
Something else I wanted to bring up as well, because I personally hate spending time by myself with myself. I like to be surrounded by people. Mm-hmm. So doing development, learning all that shit, that must be lonely, but it seems like you thrive on it.
Yeah, I definitely like spending time with myself. I'd say I'm also quite social, but...
Which is nuts because you're sitting here, you can talk the business side of it, you can talk about the development and the design side of it. So it was just like, whoa.
I always loved like at Envato doing demo, and as people at Envato probably know, and especially in my hosted team, I always wanted to do demo.
Because what's demo? Talk
demo is just demo. Like Friday, at the end of the sprint, which is 2 weeks, you do demo of what you've done.
Right.
And you present in front of whoever rocks up, which is usually a fair few people. And you just showcase what you've done over the couple of weeks. And I thought we were always doing really cool stuff, and we were always building stuff quite quickly and develop and design things quite quickly. So we had a lot of visual things to show, and I thought, why aren't we showing this? So I always loved doing demo and showing that sort of things.
Anything that helped you with
It definitely helped me
rationalizing and explaining things thoroughly.
I feel like I've always had a bit of a, and mum has said this, a bit of a gift in like translating those.
Sorry, who's mum?
Mum.
Oh, mum. I beg your pardon. I beg your pardon.
This is mum.
Mother. I heard mon.
Mon. Mon's also a big part of my life. Monica's my girlfriend. Mom.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. Yes, of course. Yeah.
But mum said that I'd had like a good knack at kind of translating technical things.
What's your mum's name? Let's shout her out.
Karen.
Shout out to Karen.
She's in London. Yeah.
Hey, she's living in London now. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Oh, awesome.
Technical concepts into everyday.
Yeah.
You know, just like to people that don't really or aren't really in that world.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's
explaining a complex problem in a very human kind of, not dumbed down, but in a more kind of logical.
It comes down to breaking that problem into small pieces that. Yeah.
When you do that in your brain, it's a lot easier, but to verbalize it and to articulate it in a way where people have never been exposed to that piece of technology or problem is a skill in itself. So you're selling yourself short.
Well, the good thing is the way you do it is, I feel like when you do it, you're like, we're learning something, but also it's sort of like inspiring to like get to the next thought.
Mm-hmm.
Like whenever we talk about Daily Fire stuff with the work we've done together, it's hard to stay on track because there's so many cool things as we
should riff. Yeah, definitely. That's a big problem of, that I kind of, I don't struggle with, but I'm aware of in freelance and Daily Fire especially is staying on track because,
See, with Daily Fire, it's awesome when I first read about it, but now that you've sat here and you've explained it, now it means that much more to me because it's beyond the music. Mm-hmm. It's actually getting people connection. Who aren't into who don't work in the same department from or could be from two ends of the world
exactly
that could potentially connect up to me it's just like the commercial aspect of it is bouncing off the walls for me right now and I got so many ideas to share with you but after
I got ideas for it too
good
well the amazing thing about Daily Fire is all week people have been asking who's coming on the show this week and this is one of the first ones where when I explain the side hustle, I'm actually like invested in explaining it because it's just so simple and exciting. Yep.
All right. Let's U-turn back to you were fed up at Envato. Things weren't being...
you were being stifled design-wise.
You're being stifled. You're being choked in terms of your opinions and stuff like that. At which point did you go, all right, cool, I'm ready. I'm ready to call it quits. Did Steven come through and say, hey... work on this or did you quit first and then Steven approached you?
I think I was even doing a bit of freelance for Steve like on the side
during Envato.
In my last kind of months at Envato that kind of I was also looking at my annual leave and being like if I leave on the whatever of February that I would like get more annual leave so I have a bit of cash to coast for a little bit but anyway I had Steve as a contact or as a freelance client and a little bit of annual leave there and it wasn't really a moment it was a bit more planned it kind of built up for a while and then I think I was just like over holiday break so I left in like February midway through February so it was kind of after holiday new year whatever it wasn't working I wasn't having the fun I used to have. A lot of people that I really looked up to at Envato were leaving as well and people that were kind of enthusiastic and like those people that are trying to do something different don't last too long in Envato sometimes.
Right. Those are the people that obviously
that I really liked.
That you really like.
Yeah. I really like, fed off. So I was just kind of it just kind of came to an end. But I had a really good time and I learned so much, like I've said, so much of it has set me up for the last 2 years.
Right.
And like I was saying earlier, all my clients have come, except one, have come from word of mouth from Envato. Even the work I'm doing now, like Travo, he's from Envato, he's my manager.
Yeah.
Ex-Envato people, they reach
That's
out
awesome.
To me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How many freelancers?
Your team assurance is ex-Envato, is Emma.
I'm exactly the same. I would say 80% of my freelance, 90%, a lot of it is from a connection from Envato.
Mm-hmm.
it's just like what I was saying last week, like show and prove it in Bardo.
I mean, to your guys' point is that it's really important not to burn bridges.
Yep.
Right?
Well, fuck yeah.
It's always good. Definitely. Even if you're pissed off and you're about to snap off at someone, mm-hmm. it's always good to have a rational mind when you're handling situations, just so you never know where that dollar is going to come from.
Yep.
Right? So at the moment, how many clients have you got as freelance?
Right now?
Four. Four clients freelance. You've got Daily Fire.
Yeah. And you've got kind of sitting on the sidelines at the moment, but
yeah. And you've got another
fitter. Yeah.
And you got fitter.
Yep.
How do you balance the time between four freelance clients? Yeah. All right. Daily Fire is taking a back seat. And I'm sure fitter is a little bit demanding on this stage, especially when you guys are talking about different contracts and what have you.
Yeah. Fitter is my number one, my own project priority.
Sure.
And four freelance projects is on the limit of being too much, where it like, so basically,
are you capping it in terms of the weekly hours?
Yeah. Or just how I feel day to day of like trying to manage all these, projects.
Yeah.
Are they all
development, or is it a mix of design and development?
Actually, no, one of them is just purely design.
Sure.
And are you managing like, not just the design and development, but the everything, like managing the clients and invoicing
on,
and all
on
that?
Three of them, on one of them it's rock up,
sure,
and then be present during the day, and that's kind of like an ongoing we've got work for you type thing,
cool.
just kind of like odd cards here and there doing that sort of stuff. For the last couple of years and for a good part of the freelance, it was Daily Fire was my number one priority.
Yeah.
And I would structure it so that the first half, my mornings were freelance. It was literally half and half, like mornings freelance. And that way I could get.
You say half an hour.
Half and half.
Oh, gotcha.
Mornings freelance, afternoon, my projects.
Gotcha.
And that kind of gave me the confidence to be like, okay, because if I flipped it, I could run late on client projects and stuff and working into dinner and stuff. Like, just if I got it all out of the way in the morning, then I could be free to do what I wanted to do.
Yeah, well.
So I have two questions. But first one, just for the people who haven't listened to the Steve episode, can you maybe just, in a paragraph, what is Fitter?
Yeah, so Fitter is a platform where you as a trainer or a clinician or anything can deliver wellness and fitness programs. So if you are a trainer, you have a 8-week program, something, you can build a program built up of meals, articles and workouts, and deliver that on your own custom branded app that looks like your own.
Yeah.
The problem that we saw was that there's heaps of these apps out there that are all effectively the same thing. And we just thought we could be, we could transition what Fitter was, which was another one of those apps that are just like, here's a fitness app that has a bunch of trainers on it, subscribe and all that stuff. We could transition that to being, rather than Fitter being the app you go to, it's the trainer, it's whoever you're following, it's their own app, and it's running on the Fitter platform.
So all those apps you talk about, the sea of apps are created through Fitter.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's amazing.
And it's slightly different now. We're using a progressive web app technology, which is just... it just skirts all the... There's huge benefits to it. But basically, it skirts the app stores, so you don't have to do... If we were to do what we're doing now with the app stores, we would have to create a new bundle for every trainer.
It'd be a nightmare.
It would be a nightmare to maintain, because that's two bundles for every trainer, Google and Apple.
Yeah. I actually have a question to you about that probably after the podcast, because I'm struggling with this current client who's on a... Yeah.
And what's kind of happened in tech over the last few years is web browsers have gotten really good. All the performance issues that we used to have they're still somewhat present, but it's a lot better.
Most of them are obsolete.
Yeah. And a lot of the progressive web app stuff just makes it even more performant. So I remember like building Eat Under was a hybrid app, which was what Fitter was. Just a hybrid app is basically web technology. So you build your app in HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, which is what we use on the web.
Yeah.
And then you bundle it up and you deliver it to the app store. And all it effectively is a native wrapper around a web view. So it's just a web page that you're looking at. And it looks like an app.
Yeah.
And what... So we were already doing that for Fitter, and now it's just fully embracing that on the web. And the performance of it, there's a whole bunch of performance benefits, so it can be fast. It can feel like
a native app. And that was your idea from Steve's episode. Yeah, he said that it was something that you had introduced because you had identified that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of a resurrection of it, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, so, yeah, the biggest thing to me was like, I could just see these trainers, and we're also doing like clinicians. My chiropractor is going to be on it soon. Like, but basically they don't want to be a profile on the app. It's like you being on Instagram or something like that. It's like, okay, come visit me on Instagram or Fitter. Yeah. Like you have to download the Fitter app, which is not my name. And then you have to find my profile on the Fitter app. So you as a user that's interested in this personality or this trainer or whatever, your gym, your chiropractor, whatever it is, you have to go to this app that is not them and find them on it.
Yep.
This eliminates that. It's their own app. It's their own app icon, app name, color, everything. It looks like it's their own.
Mm.
And you as the user download the whoever's app it is. You don't download the Fitter app.
So at the moment, anybody can make an account, like any trainer can sign
not
up.
Not right at the moment, but yeah, very soon.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
All right.
It's coming soon.
Well, my second part to that question is, it's evident that you know how to like plan your days and and sort of run your week. And I know personally, like you've gone trips and stuff and like, I'm interested in that balance. How do you maintain that balance?
Thank you. Took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah.
Because you've got four freelance clients, you've got two side hustles, you've got a girlfriend that I'm assuming you guys live together. Yep. Obviously, so you've got to maintain that relationship. So exactly to Luke's point, how the fuck do you keep all this together, man?
I think practically to-do lists, like just a simple list at the start of the day really helps me think about what I need to do today.
Yeah.
I think I work quickly, which is handy to be able to just get in and get it done.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any more to it than that. Just like, you know, having the to-do list or at least just a plan of what you're going to tackle today is so huge because a lot of times if I'm just working on Jellyfire Fitter, a lot of times I just go off my head and it's just like, okay, what do I see that I want to work on?
Yeah.
And what happens is when you finish that task, if you don't have something to go on to, as in something to check off and move on to, you end up just kind of wasting time. It's not that I'm 100% efficient all the time, but like having that like little list of like, okay, this is what I need to do for this client. This is what I need to do for that client. And then just checking it off.
So when you say a list for the day, because I'm very guilty of this, I'll do a list. Every day I do a list.
Yeah.
And every day a few items roll on to the next
definitely.
Day.
Definitely. Yep.
So how is that something that happens for you as well? Yeah. Like how do you manage that? Especially think about the half-half type
thing. I have a little system in my notebook where it's like tick, tick, and then I have like a little circle and an arrow. And that means it's turn moved over. To next day. Yeah.
And then does that come to the top of the next day? Like, how does that?
It's not that formal. Like, it's literally like I don't do it the day before. Sometimes I have done it the night before, and that's handy, but I don't have the routine to keep doing that. But just, there's no real process to it. It's like, okay, what do I need to do today at the start of my day? Usually, like, you know, with coffee, whatever, figure that out.
Yeah.
And then just go to work.
Yeah. Okay. Mentally, how do you deal with everything? Because obviously, it seems like your weeks are packed. Four freelance clients, two side hustles, relationship to maintain. What do you do what do you do to decompress and kind of just do what Sam wants to do? What's the thing that will kind of take you away from that? And I mean, what do you do to relax, essentially?
We go for walks and then we, I don't know, just like there's nothing really to it. I exercise almost every day.
Right.
I have a problem with my right arm.
Okay.
Where it's like, that's why I go to Cairo.
Right.
It's an ongoing issue from a bike crash a while ago.
Yeah. Wow.
A couple of years, probably 4 or 5 years ago now.
Bike as in bicycle, not motorbike?
Yeah, downhill mountain bike.
Sure.
Yeah. And so I do exercise and that's definitely helped. And that's as so I was doing like a workout and then I was like stretching and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then recently, well, probably not that recently, like I've started doing yoga, which is like combining those two.
Awesome. Yeah.
Cause I would stretch all the time. And even now I can feel my arm, like get like pins and needles type thing.
Yeah. You know? Wow.
And
did you dislocate your shoulder or something? No, or what was the injury?
It's from my spine. I landed on my head and my neck. And it's like, it didn't really, I mean, initially it hurt and I felt like nervy pain and then it kind of went away.
Right.
And then from not having addressed it because it was kind of, it wasn't like noticeable day to day.
Yeah.
I just kind of like, okay, that's done. That was just a crash and then I'm on.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of eventually come back. But basically what yoga has been to me is exercise and stretching in one. So
that's
strengthening
awesome,
and exercising,
yeah.
Strengthening and stretching.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just worked so well for me in terms. So that I usually do yoga at like usually half an hour at lunchtime. And that just kind of breaks up my day. Exercise definitely helps working a computer and going outside helps a lot. Like that's why I say walking and stuff
walking,
like that,
yeah,
being
yeah.
outside.
Yeah.
Just to get your mind away from the computer, because especially as a developer or like anyone that's working a problem for a while, you're just going over it all the time.
Absolutely. You start beating
yourself
up about
yeah.
it and overthinking things. And
it's like, you know, oftentimes the solution to your problem comes to you on the walk when you're like, you know, when you're separated from it and you've
so
given
true.
Yourself a chance to or, you know, gone to sleep,
that
wake
is
up
so
the next
true.
Morning, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not always easy to do that because like halfway through a problem, you're like, oh, if I leave now, like I'm not going to, you know, have the steam that I had, you know, sometimes it's the best thing to do.
It's for the greater good sometimes.
Yeah.
So when you talk about the yoga, do you mean you do a class every day or
so
you watch
so
YouTube?
I guess where it ties
or?
A little bit into Fitter. Yeah. YouTube, on the TV upstairs. Yeah. Just like, YouTube yoga with Adrian. Shout out yoga with Adrian.
Awesome. Yeah. Nice.
That's awesome.
And then how do you deal with the, I guess working like freelance, being away from people, like how do you balance that?
Yeah. So
that
was a big thing and kind of problem, that I kind of struggled with because I really liked the environment at Envato where like you're around a bunch of people. You learn a lot by being around other developers.
Definitely.
And that was huge for me. So not having that definitely get lonely.
Yeah.
And so to combat that, I got a co-working space in Geelong. I live in Geelong. And that has worked on two fronts of getting, the biggest front is getting out of the house.
Yeah.
Working from home all the time is not fun.
No.
You have to, and just the getting out of the house, going to work, coming home is a really nice separation mentally as well, to like leave work at work, come home, and then you can actually decompress. Whereas
yeah.
if you're working at home, you're in your work environment, especially
sure.
Our work set up at home, it's kind of like downstairs in the kitchen where the dining table would be. We have our desk set up. So it's kind of like in the middle of the house and it doesn't really give you that area. This is work and this is home.
I can totally relate, man.
Yeah.
I can totally relate. Working from home sucks. My dining table and the chairs that we have
yep.
are so fucking uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
Same.
Every single time I
yep.
get up from 2 hours of just sitting there like
yep.
punching out work on my laptop, my bottom left... My left butt cheek,
yeah,
it's fucking sore.
Specifically,
yeah, yeah.
specifically, yeah, yeah, because I'm constantly leaning on it for some reason. I need to get one of those like wheel, like the little donut things, just to, like
well,
relax it.
Yeah,
or one of
who would have thought
cheeks.
Like sitting for 8 hours a day isn't good for you?
Well,
yeah,
no, but
yeah.
just I mean, to your point, is that
yeah.
separation is actually okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
I'm gonna leave my place of living,
yep.
and sleeping and
yep.
comfort and everything and go somewhere else to get
yeah,
this
yeah.
shit done and be around other human beings.
Yeah.
It's so important mentally, but also productivity wise.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing. Lindsay from the Elements team, who used to work in Envato
mm-hmm.
as well. He worked remotely.
Yeah.
So he was a tech lead working remotely.
Mm-hmm.
And he had these really cool techniques. Like he had like two phones, like a work phone
mm-hmm.
and so one phone with Slack for work,
right.
one phone with real phone. Because he was working remotely, he had like a shed in the backyard sort of
yeah,
thing
yeah,
where he
yeah.
would work.
Yeah.
And just leave the work phone in there.
Yep.
When he came inside, no laptop, nothing.
Yeah.
He just leave. And
yeah,
awesome.
that was his area.
That's what I want. Yeah, like a little office that's separate from the house.
Yeah.
Because, I don't like, it's fine working from home a couple of days a week, but I like being out of it. You feel more productive as well. Like
Absolutely.
Even just coming into Melbourne, I like being on the tram, like going on the tram. Like you feel
mm.
like you're out and about doing it.
Yeah.
And
I remember the day after I got made redundant might have been the best day of my life. Yeah. I went and got a new phone.
Yeah.
I got my laptop. It was so productive.
I remember that day because you were calling me up.
Yeah, it was an amazing day. Yeah. I got no work done that day besides like setting myself to be self up to be able to do work.
Yeah.
And getting your shit out of that building too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is the laptop I got. And I have a soft spot for this now. I wanted to sell it because I have no use for this laptop besides recording this podcast.
Yeah.
And I can't sell it. Like, I got this like weird detachment to it now.
All right. So you've talked us through your freelance gigs, your side hustles, decompressing, which is yoga. Do you have any like hobbies or anything that you want to put time towards in terms of things that you'd like to do besides work? Yeah. Or is it a bit of a blurred line?
Well, it is a bit of a blurred line. That's kind of what I struggle with. I mean, for hobbies, I like doing electronics and stuff, which is like also kind of, I mean, I'm not big into it, but that's a little area of interest that I can work on. And the thing that really gets me kind of a bit excited about that is like, it's a way to bring my skills into the real world. So with web development, everything that you ever build is virtual. It's like on a web page, it's on a screen somewhere, which is great because it can reach so many people instantly, but you lack that real world, I made this thing and here, hold it type thing. The material part of it, which I always kind of like think about in relation to dad or granddad, where they're building only things in real life. So that's a thing. But otherwise, Monica, she loves to travel and do this sort of, travel. She's always planning our next trip and everything.
That's awesome.
Which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And it's super, we're super grateful for both of our opportunity to be able to work and travel at the same time.
Does she freelance as well?
Well, she works for Envato and they have a very flexible, setup.
Yeah.
So, that's been huge in terms of, getting out of the house, doing new things and like, I always think like with traveling, like I like the feeling that where you're kind of at the end of the trip and you want to go home because like you can be at home for a while and then you're like, okay, I'm being at home for too long. I want to get like, I don't know. It's just nice to have that balance. And you kind of need, obviously balance is with everything is key, but, that's definitely helped me. Otherwise I do mountain biking, not too much as of late, but mountain biking is a thing.
Like, do you go on actual courses and stuff?
Yeah, or? Like downhill mountain biking. So I have an enduro bike now, but downhill mountain biking.
Awesome, man.
That was kind of what I did throughout high school and everything. Was go. I was even building tracks then. Like that, I loved building tracks almost more than riding. So me and a mate Billy would always go out and build. All the time, all weekend, after school, all this stuff, and just go dig on a hill and make these tracks. And so like we would spend hours
with your hands,
and hours.
Like with a shovel kind of thing?
Hours and hours. One time we actually got a dingo digger, which is like those little diggers. We rented it out for the day. Was awesome. We rented it out for the day. It's like one of those little diggers, like a bobcat, but you stand on the back of it and we were building a track with that. And
that's cool.
What, did you just find a piece of land somewhere and start digging into it?
It's
or?
On council land. It's on, if you're here in Geelong, it's on council land, but we'd be building there for probably close to a year and no troubles. So we just did it one day.
And do people use this track?
That's the coolest thing. So I don't know as of late. I haven't seen anyone down there, but the coolest thing was after we built it, Geelong has a really good mountain biking scene. It's kind of like a bit underground and it's not really underground, but you just, you always see little kids out there riding a mountain bike. And what was the coolest thing is the kind of next generation kids come through and kind of take the tracks that we built and kind of make it their little home and start building on them and doing their own little modifications to the track, which was like so awesome because we put a lot of time into these tracks and then to see them, the next generation come through, use that. Because we did exactly the same thing as our generation. We got into mountain biking because there was older kids when we were younger that had their jumps and their tracks and all that stuff.
That's awesome.
And they'd be built here. So then we were like, oh, it'd be fun to go build that.
Yeah.
So in fact, in IB, you have to do in, you have to do like an out of school project thing.
What's an IB?
IB, like the
school. Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon. Yeah. Yes.
As like a thing towards your score, you have to do like an outside of school volunteering project or whatever. Yep. And I actually managed to get my mountain bike track building as hours counting towards out of school extracurricular project,
which that's cool.
Which was a benefit because I would do that anyway. That was something I would like to start doing.
Cool.
Yeah.
So how the kids or the next generation hear about the track? Like, was that the
just
spot?
Just from
or?
People. Yeah, well, it is a spot. It's called GFT. I don't know what they call it now, but GFT was Geelong's Finest Trails. and they all have little names and stuff, but if you were down the river, the Barwon River through Geelong, people know that there's tracks down there. It's just like a matter of finding them. And then
have you guys named your track?
No, we haven't named that track. It just sounded like called. We called it like, I don't know. Like that was just called Racetrack because we had a race one time. So Yu Yang is like a proper setup. They had a race on a long weekend one time, and they have all the bunting, like all the yellow tape that goes alongside the track.
Right.
At the end of the race, they get everyone that's like watching to pick up their piece and put it down. So what we would do is we collected a whole bunch of stuff, shoved it in our backpacks, and then took it home, and then took it to our tracks, bunted our tracks, so it felt like
brilliant.
A racetrack.
Yeah,
and that was cool. And we had a phone, like two people with their phones at the finish line and start line, walkie-talkies, or not walkie-talkies, they were actually phones.
Yeah.
A timer. Okay, 3, 2, 1, go, start. And then the person at the bottom would stop the timer. And we had like a little unofficial race on the tracks. It was like a minute long, about 55 second long track. For a downhill track, it's decent to have in your backyard.
That's awesome, man.
That would have been amazing.
It was so fun. That was like the highlight. And I think that was what my project was, like building up to that. We were going to do that anyway. It was nice that we could tie it into school.
I'm kind of gobsmacked because everything you've talked about is building something, whether it's software, whether it's actual tangible, whether it's building up an idea. So your granddad and your dad have definitely had an influence on you from day one.
Well, yes and no. So my dad, I've becoming a lot closer with him as of late. So like I mentioned, mum and my real dad split up when I was about three.
Right.
And then moved to Australia with my stepdad, who has basically been my dad.
Brought you up.
But as of the last few years, I've been going to New Zealand a bit more and just spending time.
Is your dad still living in Christchurch?
Yeah, he's in Rangiora, just out of Christchurch.
Yeah.
And then granddad, they were both in Christchurch. And then both affected by earthquakes, had to move out a little bit, but still around there.
Yeah.
But only as of really the last few years have I properly spent more time with them, and like, you know, as how old I am now, 23, like, you know, being able to connect with them on that level, which has been awesome. And like,
that's great, man.
Yeah. So many things that I've learned about my dad that I wouldn't have otherwise really. Yeah, I don't know. Just like the way he thinks about things. It's like,
but the things
so alike.
But things are falling in place. You're like, okay,
exactly.
This is where I've learned this shit.
And Dad dropped out when he was in year 10. So he dropped out to be to do an apprenticeship or even work with his dad at the used cars dealership, just like working on stuff, being a mechanic, working on cars. And then he went on to start his own company and garage mechanic in Christchurch, which he sold to my stepbrothers. I have three stepbrothers. I have one full brother and one's three stepbrothers.
Sure.
If I stayed in New Zealand, so mum moved to Australia for, I think, just job opportunity, just a little bit more opportunities in Australia than there are in New
Australia
Zealand.
Australia or Melbourne specifically?
Well, we moved to Mount Macedon and then to Geelong eventually after that.
Yeah.
I've lived in Melbourne, but we've never lived in Melbourne as
a
family.
Just Victoria in general. Yeah.
If I stayed in New Zealand, I would be a mechanic.
Yeah,
my brothers are all mechanics.
All mechanics.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man.
But, I guess that's kind of it's kind of in the blood, I guess, to like build things and see.
I definitely think so as well. We're obviously starting to wrap up here. I mean, I'd love to carry this on, but you've obviously got plans, and it is a Friday night. Daily Fire, it's a music application.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to know what music you're into.
Kind of a bit of everything. Mostly, I would say, mostly electronic music.
Really? thought it would have been hip hop, man. All the stuff you linked through Slack. I was expecting hip hop, and I was going to make a big shout about
it. That could be our influence, though. I want people to share other stuff because it's pretty much just me.
I know. No, it is.
No, that's certainly the case. If in my Slack team, where I set up after Envato, I'll share. No one shares other than me and Monica, and maybe Odin sometimes.
Shout out to Monica, by the way, because she contributes a lot to our Jewel of Doves channel as well. Yep. I mean, so do you. So do you, actually.
Yep.
You, Monica, Luke, and I are probably the most.
And the way you like quick time those videos, you can actually just watch it.
Yeah.
I always go to the link, but I love watching the videos as well.
That's something I like kind of at Envato sharing in the design channel is like having those videos. Just like it's so much easier. You get so much more. It's not about getting like ready, but like people just watch it. It's easy in the channel. It's like, you know,
that's exactly what you want to show. Exactly. Like that's what you want to show.
I think that's
going back to your music preference.
Yeah, so with my group of friends in Geelong, it's electronic. I definitely listen to a lot of hip hop. The thing I love about hip hop is the culture and like so many like little YouTube documentaries and stuff on hip hop culture and talking to big names in hip hop. There's so much depth there that's like so interesting.
Yeah.
Whereas electronic is, I think I like the music more. Sure. There doesn't feel like there's as much story. There isn't as much story. Like hip hop is all story, culture. Absolutely. It's like all this stuff that they're talking about. And then when you start kind of learning a bit more about the background, you start picking up on that in the songs and what they're talking about and who they're talking about or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's kind of like decrypting everything.
And I only somewhat recently kind of came to the... Not like kind of the realization that hip hop is not really even about the music, not about the sound of the music. There's definitely a big part of it, but it's what they're saying and how timely it is, or what, you know, there's so much more depth to it than electronic, which is mostly about the sound. You know?
Electronic is a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
You go out there, you have a drink, listen to that shit, you vibe out to it, you have a good time.
Well, the hip hop's about where they're from and what's
exactly. Hip hop, you plug in and you're actually listening to the story.
That's why I can't really listen to it while I'm working because,
you can't focus.
I agree.
Because Luke and I are hip hop heads, probably you can tell from the channel. So this is probably a bit of a biased question. I'm not too sure if everyone else can relate to it who's listening to this, but who are your top three artists?
I was literally about to ask the same thing. I was going to say one, but three is hip hop.
Give us top three, odd number.
Like, I'm not like huge on hip hop, but as of late, I've been listening to specifically Good News by Mac Miller. That song is just like stuck in my head.
Rest in peace, Mac Miller.
I would say Eminem and Kanye.
Wow.
I don't listen to them all the time. But if you were to look through my Spotify, they're probably the ones that would appear the most.
I was not expecting that.
And probably because Kanye was like in high school, I listened to him all the time on the train, like graduation and stuff.
Yeah.
On the bus, sorry. And Eminem, similarly, like I just listened to him on the bus. But also every time I listen to Eminem, there's like what I was saying before about the story and stuff. Yeah. There's so much in there that's like, You miss listening to it once or twice, and then you pick up on the next song. Definitely. And you're like, oh shit, that's
It's like watching a Quentin Tarantino movie. Yeah. You can't just watch it once and be like, I've watched it. No, fuck off. You gotta watch it at least three more times to figure out everything. Yeah,
exactly.
What's your favorite Eminem album? Like, what's the?
I don't think I have a proper album. I don't know. Whatever, like Toy Soldiers is whatever that album is.
Encore.
Yeah, Encore. That would be.
That's cool. All right, man. Like I said, we're starting to wrap up. So probably the last question that we have for you is mentorship. So you've obviously have only had 2 years worth of 9 to 5.
Yeah.
You've done everything in between. You're working for yourself. You will be working for yourself for the rest of your life. You're only 23, which is fucking crazy. Because you came through the door and I opened it and I had to like look up, like I strained my neck. How tall are you?
I'm 6'7" last time I checked.
6'7", 23, and a fucking genius, all right? So my question is around mentorship. Have you kind of cemented yourself or have really looked up to someone to the point of like, okay, shit, this person has done it this way, I'm going to implement what they've done or followed their path to follow my dreams?
I don't know to that level, but in development, definitely Odin Dutton, in development, just because
Sorry, who is he?
He's a developer that used to work at
Envato.
Yeah, yep. He's at Coltramp now. But we started on the same day. He came in as a mid-level developer. I came in as a junior developer. And we were like, it was funny. Pony Express was the first team we went into. It's kind of like an odds and ends team. They just kind of get whatever.
Pony Express is...
It's a team at Envato. Was a team at Envato.
Sure.
And we started on the same day, our first day. And everyone else on the team had other stuff to do and that was more pressing. So we had to work together on this card that we both, you know, first day on the job.
So you onboarded yourself.
We onboarded ourselves together.
Right.
And I learned so much from just working with him.
Yeah.
I say it to him all the time when I'm with him. So in development, definitely, yeah, Odin, I learned the most and he would be a mentor to me. Otherwise... just kind of like the people that I, particular clients, like Luke has been huge. Working with Luke is like,
sorry, who's Luke?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, cause Luke and I have worked on a few projects together. A few now, like Daily Fire, Team Sharon's Whisper, like a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, Whisper was a big one. That was a quick one
too. I'm still working for Whisper. Like I'm still doing contract work for them.
Awesome.
I always like said at Envato, or I've said to other people, like whenever I got a design from a designer, I took that as a starting point. Like it wasn't that was the design that I was going to implement like most developers would do.
You'll and challenge it.
Yeah. I was like, I don't really like that. I could do that better.
I would have loved to see you push back on Luke.
Well, so this is what I'm getting to. And that got me in a bit of trouble. But Luke is the only developer that only designer that I haven't had that. Like I'm happy. Okay. That's what he's done. Okay. I'll do a pixel.
Oh, wow.
Except for Daily Fire, but that's because there's bias there.
Luke has got a smile from ear to ear. Yeah, this guy's
if you look at Daily Fire, the like homepage, dailyfire.co.
It's horrible. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. It's actually really cool.
Like, that's Luke's thing, and then a bit of my thing on top of that.
I've got to say, like you like took it to another level.
Yeah,
with that one, like it was like a pure like this is like the base.
Yeah,
and then we didn't realize at the time.
Yeah,
and then when what you did with it was like a whole different level.
But then like Whisper Team Assurance is like Luke's design, pixel perfect on the page. That's what it is.
Yeah, oh, and stop it.
Yeah, no, and this is like Sam is the only developer actually besides Stacey at Envato.
Yeah.
Who the design the built page is better than the design.
Yeah.
In my folio, anytime we've collaborated, mm-hmm. if you look at my folio, it is a screenshot of the actual page, the browser page, not my sketch file, which never happened. But that never happened.
And obviously given that we haven't had any the opportunity to work together yet, this is exactly what we've just mentioned. I've actually heard from multiple sources that you're the type of person that will challenge something, but in doing that, it's not an egotistic thing or a pride thing, is to kind of take it to that next level.
It's an enhancement.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's something awesome, that I've learned specifically with Daily Fire is like in relation to freelancers, like at the end of the day, you can go over a design a million times and it's not really delivering any more value to the end user. And that's kind of something I've like matured in development is like being able to let go of the nice, fancy, flashy design in lieu of having a working product that functions well and is easy to use. Because it doesn't matter if your button has a nice gradient on or whatever, as long as that button's there and is clickable and it does the thing that someone came on your site to do. I think and Steve even like admitted this in regards to Fitter, like Steve does all the design and he said something about like he'd spend all the money doing like all these little design changes. Yep. But at the end of the day, we have a limited amount of time to get something done and to best use that time to make it look nice. It's not just like get it done scrappily. It's like a level of quality, but also with a goal in mind, like with a
I mean, to do. Again, what I'm picking up here, that's kind of your outlook on life is that whatever problem you're approached with is, all right, let's get it functioning well.
Yeah.
Let's worry about the polish later.
Yeah, yeah. But the polish definitely comes. Like with all of my websites, like,
of course.
Definitely spend a lot of time on the polish.
The polish is a sprinkle on top, but let's figure out the true essence of what thing that we're trying to solve for.
Yeah. The crazy thing is that takes time.
It does.
But but time in the sense of experience.
Like, yeah.
Like you're 23 years old. Like it's taken me a long time
to realize that's the thing that the maturity on you, Sam, has blown my mind. Yeah. Like for a 23-year-old to be here, like talking to us the way, I mean, what are we, we're in our early 30s, right?
33.
And we're still not fucking mature. Like we're still, you know, we're still brats.
Doing our best.
Yeah. But to kind of sit here and give us a piece of your mind and tell us about your process a little bit and what you've kind of gone through.
Mm-hmm.
Dude,
definitely.
You've got a huge future ahead of you. And and this has been a pleasure of mine to have you here. Obviously, this is the first time that we meet face to face. We've spoken over Slack and stuff. Yep. But I'm fucking like mind blown. I don't know about you.
I've been mind blown.
You've been mind blown for a while.
For years, yeah.
But again, man, thank you so much for coming through. Obviously, this has been great. Oh, I can't wait to launch it.
You forget this.
Oh, the socials. Plugins. Yes,
socials.
The socials.
Tell us your socials.
I don't have any socials.
No, what about Daily Fire?
Dailyfire.co will be the best bet. I don't have a personal website. I have a company website. I don't like,
Well,
Monica and I are actually working on my portfolio slowly.
Good.
Because she thinks I need a website.
You
I probably do.
You do. You do.
For your brand, yeah.
Well, do you want to plug in the our community Slack just so they can link up with Sam and try out Daily Fire?
Yeah. It's jewelofdoves.com.
I'm in there.
Jewelofdoves.com.au maybe? We have both.
Okay. Okay. Find. Okay. Find Jewel of Doves on Instagram. In the bio, there's a link to our community. When you join that,
if
you
can jump
talk
into
to
the...
Luke or myself or Sam, and you can try out Daily Fire. So you can just drop in whatever link of a track or an album that you want, and then you'll have access to Daily Fire. Correct.
Yep.
Awesome.
100%. Yeah. And everyone's welcome in the Slack channel. Just let us know, and we'll chat.
For sure. I'm personally really fucking excited to launch this episode. I can't wait for it to go out.
I'm more excited to think about what we're going to do together. Yeah. Especially thinking about off screen. Like, what can we do off screen?
Yeah, that's all. For sure. Hey, man, any last words for anyone who's looking to start their own thing?
Just do it. Like, there's you don't know what's going to happen. You know, it's like, it sounds cliche or whatever, but like, just start. You know, and that's kind of, what I did with software. I was like, just one foot in front of the other, finish this little problem first, and then you don't know where that leads. So I guess that would be my last words.
Yeah, dope.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I get definitely the sense of that. Yep. Just taking the courage, taking the leap.
Yep. Yeah, awesome. Just do it.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much. Can't wait to launch this. Mm-hmm. This has been fucking great. I'm hyped.
Thank you.
Thank you.